I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Live. Can't Live. We're
talking about books and stuff. Hello. It's Can't Live. With me, Dina, and Jen is here.
Me, Jen.
Rosie. She just looked up at me being the cutest.
From behind a pillow.
Yeah. She's got a weird vibe today and I'm into it.
It's the full moon. It was the very bright, what kind of moon is it? The moon in Leo.
Moon in Leo.
It was the Leo moon.
It was for us.
It was for us.
And it was for these Leos.
Rosie doesn't like it though. Makes her grumpy.
She's an Aquarius, so she's weird.
Yeah, she is weird.
But I love an Aquarius, so that's probably why big time on Rosie.
Yeah, I mean, most of my longtime partners, dogs or human, have been Aquarians. Long term. Yeah, most, not all.
Not those short term dogs.
The ones who never listen to the podcast.
That would be funny. That would be funny if people were just like, yeah, well, I was just dating this dog for a bit, but I'm not going to keep them. We didn't really get along.
It was just a 4-week, you know, dog situation.
Yeah. Had to get out of it.
Yeah, it was fine.
Had to get out of it.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs. There's a spaniel. It was, you know, high maintenance.
They are very high strung.
They are. I love them, but high strung, lots of fur.
No, you're correct. So if you couldn't tell, this episode is another one of your absolute favorites. Just me and Jen.
The mini-sode.
Talking about whatever we want. And it's going to be some different stuff than we have talked about before.
Before we start recording, we're talking about probiotics. So that's like, So we're sparing you, friends of the podcast.
But feel free to email us at, I don't remember what our email is, cantlit@poetryisdead or something.
Or just DM us or like tweet at us.
If you want to talk about probiotics or you have some tips, which is relevant because today we're going to talk about advice.
Oh.
And that doesn't mean we're going to give you advice.
No.
But we're going to talk about it really more as a concept mm-hmm. and as a thing that we have to contend with.
Yeah, whether we want it or not.
Yeah. And it feels like it's something that's really everywhere. Like, and yeah, whether you want it or not, it's around. Whether it's people that are talking to you, whether it is something online.
Whether it's somebody advocating for all beef, salt, and water diet.
Oh, listen.
Dina, you need to eat all beef.
I need advice on how to quit
vegetable matter.
Researching Mikayla Peterson. That's what I need help with. I need advice on how to get that out of my life, but I can't. I'm obsessed.
I mean, I just looked at it for 2 seconds just now, and I spent a lot of time dissecting her face, which I don't feel good about that.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing to do.
No. I mean, it's fascinating and stressful.
I mean, I really wonder what she poops like. That's all.
I would honestly love for her to post some of her poops on her Instagram.
Like, is she on...
Mix up the grid.
Laxatives? Because if you're just eating beef...
No.
I can't imagine.
I really don't think she is.
Okay.
I don't know where that beef is going in her body. So, Chan, I have one question to start.
Yeah.
What is advice? Like, when you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Advice is when someone is telling you what they think you should do. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And they think it's going to be better for you.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times it's really that they just need to get their opinions out. Because advice is often opinions cloaked in something that's good for you.
Yeah, I think advice often, you're right. I think advice often is opinions. I also think advice sometimes is genuinely something you need to hear.
Sometimes.
And it's complicated.
It's complicated. Like, I was thinking about that old adage, right? You don't give advice unless someone asks for it. But then sometimes they don't ask for it and they still need it. Or I need it. Sometimes I need to hear something, even though I haven't asked for it, because I don't know I need it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there, and I don't know if there's a difference between unsolicited advice and someone, because to me, unsolicited advice is something someone lays on you in a way that is for them.
Like it's something going on with them that they need to get out.
Yes.
And when it's laid on you, I think there's a difference though. Like I wrote in my notes here that like there's a difference between advice that like resonates with you. Like you hear it and you're like, oh, that is something I should do. Maybe I don't have the capacity to do it right now. Maybe I don't want to do it right now. But yeah, I understand why someone would be giving you that advice. And then there's the advice that makes you either confused, really angry, or just you're all out at sea. Like you just don't know. And I think that whenever we hear the latter, I think you know, then I feel like you know, then it's more about that other person needing to say that thing rather than about you needing to hear it.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think there's this other type of advice that is more common now, which I appreciate, where someone will educate me on something. Mm-hmm. And like moving forward, you know, make this better choice. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially in terms of writing relates to the way we talk about, I'm using air quotes, writing diverse with diversity. But I think that is also a type of advice. Yeah. And in that situation, sometimes people are prickly or defensive against the advice because they're unwilling to confront things about themselves, things about the choices they've made. Like, it doesn't mean you can't be uncomfortable, but like, I'm always grateful when someone is like, no, this is bad. Like, you need to learn how to do better in this situation.
Yeah. And like, I mean, in fairness, anyone who's ever, like, I'm thinking about my students in particular, but they're like a self-selecting group, right? They're in my class because they want to learn. But anytime I've had an issue with a student where I'm like, I don't know if this is the right thing way for you to write this. I don't know if this is the right character for you to be writing through. I don't know. And they've been very like receptive and feel they're so grateful that like someone pointed it out to them. So, I mean, I do wonder about those people who push back against that particular advice. Like, cause I've never actually met one face to face. I don't think.
I wonder if it's because you're in that type of relationship, yeah. You're in a pedagogical situation. The point of the whole thing is that you are a person who has knowledge to impart, mm-hmm. as opposed to someone online deciding they're going to tell someone, hey, this is some advice I'm going to give you on how I think you should approach this character, approach this subject, et cetera, et cetera,
sure,
et cetera.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there, those are differences.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if anyone has ever like I think about my past, my older books. And I think that with The Better Mother, because there was a lot of like sort of content in there about, sort of the gay male community in the 1980s. And I think, would I write that again today? Probably not. I did the best that I could. I did as good a job as I could with the toolkits that I had at that time. But would I do it again? I don't know. Probably not. I don't think I would have. I don't think. Although, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, people said I did a good job, but then only 12 people read that book. So I can't even tell. They're all listening to this podcast right now.
Hey, everybody. Well, what you just said about your students leads me into another idea and question. So as someone who is really in the midst of a career, but who still feels, I still feel very emerging all the time. Very much like I'm still in the pupa stage. Like I'm still mucked up in goo.
Pupa.
Yeah. I feel weird. Like I also feel that I am expected and do have knowledge to share, but also that I don't know everything. And when you're in that situation, and I would hope all of us are somewhat in that situation, that you don't just consistently think you are an authority on everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I often am both seeking advice and also asked to provide it.
Yes.
So what do you think about this idea of, you know, our maybe consistent pupa stage?
It's what makes my life exciting, I think, to be a constant pupa.
Yeah.
I'm in edits for my poetry collection with Paul Vermeer, friend of the podcast, former guest.
Yeah.
Lovely Paul Vermeer.
Hi, Paul.
And we had a really lovely phone conversation. And, I recall that he was saying things to me about these edits, and he was being super clear and like kind and generous, being really clear about the things that could be done with these poems. Things I had have not occurred to me because I'm not really a poet. Like I say that all the time, but I'm not really a poet.
Jen, you are. It's too late. You are now.
Well, I'm a learning poet. I'm emerging.
I'm
a pupa poet.
Yeah.
I'm a pupa poet. And
pee.
And in this conversation I was having with him, I didn't say much, as is typical with me in editorial meetings, if it's my work that's being edited, because I always think whatever my reactions are, I'm going to table them until I've processed all this information. And then maybe in a week or two, I'll have questions or whatever. And I was worried. I'm like, poor Paul must think I'm a real jerk face, because I just wasn't really saying much. Like, I was like, okay, I get it. Okay, thanks. And then, like, you know, and then I'm like, no, he must know that, like, I've always had a policy. Just shut it and write your notes and then look at it later. I haven't been edited like that, like creatively, because I've been writing those kids nonfiction books. So they're not like, I mean, they're creative in many ways, but they're not like close to me in the intimate sort of way that the poetry collection is or a novel might be for me. So I haven't been edited in that way in a long, long time. And it felt really great. I was not being quiet because I was mad, Paul, okay? But it was just, it's exciting to me to see things the way somebody else sees them. It's exciting for somebody to actually explain and jam it to me in a way that I actually understand, as opposed to the way that I understood before, which is apparently I didn't really understand it. So it's all really exciting. And I would hope that in reverse, if I'm editing someone else, that they also find that exciting, you know? Like, I mean, if you're writing, you want to learn, like, it's almost like you need people to tell you, because it's an exciting thing to have that door kicked open in your brain, right?
100%. Yeah. I love getting new information. I love learning things. I love when other knowledgeable people share with me. I think it's also why we're able to have these kinds of conversations, because you and I have different experiences and different techniques that we use and different modes that we work in. And it's great to be able to hear someone else's, I don't know, either how they work or what their idea is about a particular concept or even writing or style, whatever it is. Yeah. But then there are other times when I'm asked to give advice, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, you know what? I got to be that person that just says, I don't know. It doesn't mean there aren't things that I do know, but I always want to be able to not act like I have the answers. And I feel like last year I really tried to enact, and this year as well, even though it's new, I really tried to enact that more. And when people would ask me for something, I'd be like, listen, 100% not the best person to help you with this. yeah. And I know that you feel comfortable talking to me. So I can either make a connection to somebody else or pass along some information or see if I can get information for you. Because again, sometimes that's part of the thing too. Not everyone is comfortable either crowdsourcing or going to other people. Like, they may only be comfortable talking to you about a particular thing. So, and like, finding a way to facilitate that some other way when you were like, no, I am not smart about this and I don't have any answers.
But doesn't that make the difference between good and bad advice, though?
I hope so.
Is knowing where your gaps are.
I would hope so.
And then I think one of the great things about being like an author who is not like we may feel like we're pupating, but like ultimately we have both been doing this for a long time. Yeah. It's that the wonderful thing is that at least we can find out where the answers are. And I think that's at the very least I can do that for somebody who needs answers. Like, I can help you find them even if I don't have them. And I quite likely won't.
Yeah, I mean, same. So then on that level, how do you give advice?
I think, you know, how do I give advice? Well, I typically don't give it unless someone wants it. So like, you know, in a class situation that those students want my advice, in an editing situation that author wants my advice. But other than that, unless you're specifically asking me, I'm not going to usually, unless there's something really egregious happening. But so in our like online support group for Black Indigenous people of color and emerging writers with established writers, what happens is the emerging writers will ask us a question, and then whoever has the, you know, experience in that area will answer it. And I think that for me is a much more comfortable space to be in, as opposed to me standing there and just mouthing off a bunch of advice. Because the thing that I've learned in these, you know, 20 years that I've been doing this is that there are many different ways to do this job, to have this career, to establish the career you want, to have the identity that you want as an author or your persona. All of those things are a million different ways of doing it. But I also think that what happens is if you give advice without people asking you for it, then you could be giving like the wrong advice. You could be giving them something that's going to misdirect them, that's not going to suit who they are. So I often think that, you know, the advice that I've heard in terms of being a teacher or an editor has always been the old adage, the old cliche, which is focus on the craft. I think that's good. But I also think that we also have to open that up a little bit, because you do have to consider where people come from, who they are, what stage they're at in their sort of, you know, writing life. So that is more than focusing on the craft, right? Like, yeah. Because you can't just focus on the craft sometimes. Sometimes focusing on the craft will either give that person too much or too little or in the wrong direction. And like, just as a really simple example is if somebody comes to you with like a short story draft and it's a first draft, then the feedback you're going to give to that is going to be much different than if somebody gave you like a fifth draft, right? Like, you're not going to go in with a copy edit and the details on a first draft. You're going to stick to big picture. You're going to ask questions about the plot, whatever. But the fifth draft is a much different beast. So that's what I mean about, you're not actually just focusing on the craft. You're looking at the situation around it. What about you? How do you get advice?
I feel like I get asked for advice less about writing itself, although I am asked to look at people's work. And when I am in that situation, I always ask people what they want before I start to give any notes. Because if people yes. have specific things they're looking for, I would just rather know. Also, I always think if you're giving advice, you have to be prepared to have someone not give a shit about it.
Oh, like, they might not take it.
Yes. And yep. So if you are like putting all your emotional worth into the advice that you're giving, and then someone doesn't give a shit about it, you're going to feel bad and maybe be, again, defensive or weird about it.
Well, advice is not imposing your opinion on somebody
else. You got to just like be okay with people being like, same with my notes. I always put a disclaimer in my notes where I'm saying like,
it's your book.
If you don't like the notes or you think they were harsh or you think something else about what's going on here, please know that you can completely discard this and discredit me if you would like. Like, that's your choice.
Yeah.
I fully support you. So I'm more often asked for advice outside of writing. People want to ask me about events, or people want to ask me about planning your own tour or the podcast, stuff outside of the craft of writing. So for that, you know, it'll depend on the situation. If I know the person, often they'll say, can I meet you and do this? And I'll be like, sure. We'll go out for coffee. Mm-hmm. We'll go have a snack. We'll go for happy hour. It depends on the person and what they need. But I am a person who likes to ask questions as well. So I'm comfortable with that. But if I don't know somebody and they send me a DM, like, I may give them a one sentence answer. I may ask for more details. Like, it really, for me, depends. It's situation by situation. Like, I've also been asked, you know, for help publishing.
Yeah.
And one time I got into like a pretty bad back and forth that lasted forever because this was a person that was trying to take too much. Mm-hmm. And I am really bad at saying no and, well, to stuff like that, or to not being helpful if I can. And so, yeah, I really let it get out of control.
Here's the...
So I want to be able to give the best information. Yeah. I feel like I already said, you know, if I don't know,
you'll find out.
I'm going to find out. Yeah. Or I'm going to just be like, you need to ask somebody else. Or it's so... When you're being asked, that's a responsibility. But you also don't have to completely cater to people, you know, giving swaths and swaths and swaths of free information. But well, like for the emerging writers,
boundary is really important. I feel like the question that I guess...
I hate that things are so opaque, and I want that to not be the case. So I do want to give people as much information as I can, but it can't be, you know, totally out of my realm of being able to not do any other normal things like go to the bathroom or eat a snack.
I think boundaries is really important. I was actually walking the dog this morning thinking about boundaries and how I can be better about enforcing them and stuff. But like one of the question that I get asked so often is like, usually what will happen is something that is, you know, like a microaggression or even a bigger aggression happens to someone who's a writer of color. And that particular emerging writer will ask me, how do I manage this? What should I do? This is a question I get constantly. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I get this. And I have realized that, you know, I say, well, let me just tell you what happened to me, you know, 15 years ago and how I dealt with it. Would I recommend that for you? I don't know. Like, maybe not. Because the thing that I'm coming to understand is that though that level of like microaggression doesn't really happen to me anymore because I'm too established. Like, it's just that I have much more privilege walking into those spaces than most writers of color at this point in Canada. And I understand that. And I also know that when I started out, the best way to get ahead was to not rock the boat, which is, I mean, I don't feel good about it, but it was the way that it was. And that's the way I almost approach anything. It's like, I'm not going to make a conflict. I'm going to think about it and then try to do in the least, you know, in the most, you know, passive aggressive way I can, which is not good. And it's not, I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just what I've learned. And it's very hard for me to break out of that. And so when I get this question now, I say that. I said, this is the way I did it. I'm not saying it's right. And I don't think it's going to be right for you necessarily, but just know that this is an option in addition to all these other options that are there for you. So I think in terms of like giving advice to somebody, I think one of the best things we can do is also help them understand that there are options. It's not, my advice is not the only advice, nor should it be.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. This made me think. So the other day I had tweeted, and people tweet advice all the time, unsolicited advice all the time about writing, about how to comport yourself,
just et cetera,
et cetera. Yeah, definitely that is happening. And so I had tweeted a little thread about how I, like how my career started and how I got published and how I did all the things I do. And I said that I would not advise anyone to do it the way that I did because of how burnt out I am now. And I didn't really have answers, but I talked about a few, you know, other things in the thread. Like, I've never won awards. I've never had grants. I've never had any of these opportunities to take time off from working a regular job or multiple jobs or whatever, all of that stuff. And I kept thinking about it as this thing of trying to parse what we encounter so often online, like very prescripted, pointed, almost mathematically adhered advice about writing that is so close to that self-help.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm wondering if you have any
self-help for writers.
Kind of, yeah. Like, this is the only way to do it. And it's like, that's 100% not the case.
No.
So how do you, what am I trying to ask? Like, how do you think about that? How do you navigate that? And again, if people are asking you for advice, how are you kind of navigating explaining to people the ways that they're going to encounter so much information about writing, about the life of writing,
and how to do it, and what to do first, and how to shape it. I mean, I think that the best thing is to, it's what I always say about like when you get edits on something from a workshop or from an editor or whatever, it's important for you to read it and really think about it, but it's also important for you to process it through your own brain. So like something that I do is when I get edits on something, I will read it and then I'll sort of pick and choose what makes sense to me. And then I'll rewrite it in a different task list in a different way. And that way I'm taking ownership of that decision as opposed to somebody else telling me what to do. So, and I think the same thing works for any kind of advice you're getting for your writing life, is that if somebody's telling you, no, you have to get an MFA and then write in the summertime when you're off teaching, or if somebody tells you, no, you have to apply for this Canada Council grant, or no, you have to do it this way. Well, you can hear it, you can think about it, and then you can process it and make a plan for yourself, but take ownership of that decision and that choice, because that's the only way that life is ever going to fit you. Like, it's never going to fit if you're doing what everybody else thinks you should. Like, I went and started an MFA program and I dropped out and I did it an entirely different way. I'm not saying that's the right way, but it worked for me. I mean, work for me, fine. I mean, I don't have like a nice job at a university or anything, but like it's, I mean, I have a job.
I mean,
job.
Hardly
it's
anyone.
A good job.
Hardly,
I have a good job.
Hardly anyone does.
Yeah, hardly anyone does. I personally have a great job at the writer's studio at SFU, but it's not like a tenured position or anything like that, which very few people have. But yeah, like I think those decisions have to feel like they're yours. They have to be yours. They might be suggested by somebody else, but the decisions still have to be yours. It has to be your plan, your life, and the way you're going to do it, however that looks.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, and I think...
I agree. And I think it's also because we also have to do what works for us at the time. Mm-hmm. Because so many of us don't just have the freedom to just sit and write all day.
Who does?
I know. Like, if you do, lick my butt.
I mean, like,
but unless you like licking butts, and then you're not allowed. You're disinvited.
I guess like lots of people do like licking butts.
I know. So I'm going to take that back and pick a different thing. Lick my nostril. I'm very snotty.
Does anyone
these days.
Like that?
So if you're into that, you're not invited. But if you hate it, come to town. Come feast. Oh, come feast on my boogers. And my snots.
It's the all booger salted water diet.
Listen, this is my new diet.
It makes me skinny.
It's called the slime diet. I'm going to start my own website. It's going to be only $5 a month because I'm really doing a cut rate version of.
I mean, you're basically upcycling your boogers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm producing them. This is fantastic for me. But everyone is not only going to have different things that are comfortable for them or that work for them, but at different times, there's going to be different ways of working that work for you. So,
and it changes.
It changes. And it's also just a matter of figuring stuff out. I mean, there are so many books about writing and blogs and all sorts of, advice out in the world. And a lot of writing is figuring out how to do it, figuring out what works for you. And it takes time. It's not fast and easy. And I know that sucks because we're already doing so many other things.
And then you write a new book and it changes again.
Yes.
Your process changes again.
So it's just, yes, exactly. About there's a process of figuring out your process and then reprocessing to find a new process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Consistently. So how do you handle it when someone is really forceful in their advice? Where I think this is something we've all had to contend with, though. Someone's really forceful in their advice, those situations where you say, thank you, but that's not going to work for me. Or you just say, I'm not interested, which you should be allowed to do, to say no. But they want to push the issue or push you.
I don't even know how to say no sometimes without. I often, and this happens to me all the time, especially online, I'll just often say thanks and then leave it. Like, I don't say I'm not going to do it, or I don't say I'm not interested. I just say thank you and try to shut it down as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Because I have like very little interest into getting into fights, especially online. I don't enjoy it. Some people, I think, really like it. It's not my jam at all. I get very
stressed.
Some
people are fapping to it for sure.
That's fine. I get so stressed.
If
I think
stressful.
I'm getting into a fight with someone, even if that person is total garbage and I don't care about that person at all, it doesn't even matter. I get so stressed about it. And I can't do it. Like the good little Chinese girl in me who takes piano lessons can't deal with it. But like I think I just say thank you and shut it down. I think that when somebody is forceful with their advice, I don't think they deserve an explanation from me, if that makes any sense at all. I just say thank you. I'm off on my way.
Yeah.
I don't need to explain to you if I'm going to do something or not. I don't need to tell you, you can keep talking at me if you want, but I'm not listening anymore.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like, if someone comes to your door and they're like, convert to our religion. You're like, no, thank you. I'm not interested. But they're like, listen up. And I do feel like people who are forceful in their advice or really want you to, I don't know.
I do think it's more
take
about
something
them.
On. It is 100%.
It's more about them because there's something going on in their life where they feel like this is necessary to say out loud to someone else. And even if no one asked for it, it's fine. And I try to understand that. And like many years of therapy have taught me that if something like that happens, it's usually about the other person. So you can just walk away and it's fine. I am in a learning process about, like I said, setting boundaries and saying no. I'm not very good at that. And I mean, same. Yeah. I mean, this is why we do what we do, right? I think this is why we're in those positions of giving advice or people asking us for advice. So, I mean, it's like, I mean, whatever. I don't know. What about you, though?
I find it really hard to not be sarcastic. That's like my big challenge. I did on Twitter respond to someone sarcastically yesterday, and I felt kind of bad. But it was one of these situations where, again, in person, it's a lot harder to just throw down that sarcasm. So, yeah, I feel similarly to you. If it's happening and someone is right in front of me, I'm just going to be like, no, thank you, or I'm not interested, or...
I'll take your tract and then recycle it after you leave my house.
Yes, thank you. I don't want it. But yeah, I just couldn't resist. Like, I felt bad, but I also was like, I had tweeted something just about writing, and I had literally said unsolicited writing advice, just write in secret. So then when you do publish something, people are impressed by you and they're like, holy shit, you fucking wrote some stuff. And it got retweeted a few times. Mm-hmm. And then someone who I don't know, but mutually knew other people, responded to it being like, I actually think it's a really good idea because, you know, you can get, build your profile and this and that. And like, it felt very much like, I don't know, SEO type stuff and thinking about branding, which is fine. And I just was in a mood, I guess. And I just, and this person writes very different things than I do.
Yeah.
And is coming at it from a very different place. You know, like if you're, my Twitter bio doesn't have Chatelaine or Vogue or any of the, like, I'm not writing for places that actually pay me. And so I just responded, oh my God, thrilled to tell all my poets about this. But like, it's one of those situations where even when we're thinking about the advice that we're giving or getting, we're also not thinking about all of the different types of people in the literary community that could be consuming it. Like, you know, someone who's writing commercial articles for glossy magazines is not the same and maybe doesn't need the same advice as somebody who is working on poetry that they're going to publish for $50.
If they're lucky. That's pretty good pay.
And so, just the whole overall exchange experience thinking about it made me think about the ways that, and again, for me to say this, like, I love attention. You think I don't want people to constantly be like, oh, I love that thing you're working on, or I love that thing you wrote. Like, I do.
We all want that.
I love it. But, I don't know. It was just me kind of subtly saying, this is part of my process. And Jen and I had also talked about this off mic. So I was just sharing it. And I literally was like, this has to be unsolicited advice because no one is asking for it.
Okay.
And I also was being kind of tongue in cheek and funny. Like, I don't know. I put a lot of swears in my tweet for fun.
My favorite piece of unsolicited advice I got on Twitter was I was complaining about something. I don't even know what it was. Complaining about my life, the writing life, whatever. And the person tweeted at me, I think you should just choose happiness.
Oh my God, I remember that.
And I was like, that's great. Thanks. Like, I don't even think I responded to it. There's nothing to say. Like, I just, I was like, you know what? If that worked, would we not all just be choosing happiness?
Yeah. Like, I pick magic, sprinkles and stardust. Like, great, I guess. Yeah.
I mean,
that's really funny.
I mean, you know what? I'm sure that person had good intentions. I'm not like, it wasn't a troll or anything. Yeah. It was just like, I was like, I don't even know who this person is. I don't know if you're listening to this podcast. I think you meant well, but it was not. No, I choose depression and resentment is what I choose.
Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. Let's make a shirt. That can be the Cantlet shirt.
I choose depression and resentment.
Yeah.
Sean Kramer, get on that.
Yeah, we need new shirts.
Okay, what's the worst piece of advice you've ever received?
About like, anything or just writing?
Nah, writing-ish.
Okay. I honestly, to this day, think the worst, I know that I've talked about this a lot, but like, I really just think overall the write every day garbage made me feel bad. Like it made
me. I think it makes a lot of people feel bad.
I think it made me feel like I was not good at anything.
I mean,
Discarding that was a great choice for me.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, yes, that makes a lot of people feel bad. And what I think it makes people feel bad, particularly if they're in a stage of their life where writing every day is just simply not possible. And it's not, you know, a lot of times.
And again, I know I've talked about this a lot, but it really, that type of advice came from, you know, there's a man. He has a wife who takes care of his house and he gets to go in a locked room and do a thing. And without any nuance to that advice, it's extremely shit-tastic.
That's the thing. That's advice where people are not taking into consideration who you are, where you're at, where you're from, and like where your life is currently. And that's what I think is really,
it also really shitty. Presumes that people have regular schedules and regular time. And it really presupposes a lot about daily routines and schedules. And it doesn't mean people can't have daily routines and schedules, even if their schedule is a fluctuating schedule. If you have the type of job where you don't work 9 to 5 or whatever it is. I don't know. I always harp on that. It's my least favorite advice. It doesn't mean that I don't think you should consistently work on what you're working on. But if you don't write for one day,
oh, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. Like a sea monster isn't going to come out of the sea and swallow you whole.
I thought you were going to say, a sea monster's not going to come out of my boogery nose and swallow you whole.
Oh, no. A sea monster is coming out of my boogery nose. That is a different project that I'm also working on. New project coming to you.
Sea monster from my nose.
Spring 2021. What about you?
I mean, I think the worst piece of advice I ever got was from someone I had gone to for mentoring advice. And he did tell me that I was too young to write The End of East while I was writing it.
Ugh, that's gross.
I was, in fairness, quite young. But it's not, it was weird to me. Like, and it took me quite a long time to not believe it, actually. Because I was really young. I was like 23, 4, around that age. And he said it, and I almost believed it for a while. And until my ex-husband, bless him, Troy, who never listens to the podcast.
Some Troy.
Father of my child. He kept saying to me, he's wrong. He's wrong. You're writing because you want to write it and it feels good to write it. So don't, and bless him for that. But he said, he's wrong. That's silly. What a silly, what a horrible thing to say. And it took me so, it could give me months to like not internalize, to externalize and realize it was bad. Because you are so young and you think, maybe I am trying to do too much. Maybe I'm not capable of it yet. And I'm realizing now, of course, it was probably more a comment on where he felt he was in his life. Maybe he felt like, you know, his career was fading a little bit and he was feeling a little bit of something. And now that, you know, looking back, I think that's probably true, but it's one of those things, you know, and it was terrible. Like but it really gutted me.
Oh, that kind of advice is so damaging. I mean, I definitely was told not to write poetry as well.
Why would anyone tell you this?
People in mentorship positions, because like only people care about fiction. Like if you're not writing a novel, don't bother. And I was like, this is not cool. Even in the at the moment, I realized it was bad advice. It wasn't a great thing to be saying.
I mean, I was just saying to a student of mine, you're going to write what feels good for you. Like, you know, she's feeling overwhelmed with all this other stuff. And I said, well, does writing this particular thing make you feel good? She's like, yeah, well, it makes me feel good. I said, well, then you're going to write it. Yeah. Just, you know, maybe to give yourself a break from this other stuff, you give yourself half an hour to write the thing that makes you feel good. If it makes you feel good, then write it. If it don't, then don't. I mean, isn't that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Just if you come for me with for advice, just know that I'm going to give you 17 options and then say it's up to you and then I'm leaving.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
I mean, you build your career, you build your life, you build your writing process, your whatever, the way you want to, or you don't, or you also don't. You don't need to plan everything. You don't need to have a schedule. You do it the way it gets done, or you give yourself a break and maybe this particular thing doesn't get done. It's fine. It's fine.
It is fine.
You're fine.
I feel like that's always what I, when people are stressed or whatever's going on, I'm always that asshole that's like, it's okay. It's okay for you to be overwhelmed. It's okay for you to stop right now. It's okay for you to take a break. It's okay for you to not take this advice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's okay.
Of course. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
It doesn't mean you don't feel bad, but I sometimes think what people want more than advice is just support in a way that allows them to move through whatever it is.
I think if you're somebody who is giving advice, if you're in a position to give advice because you're a teacher or editor or however it works, or you're an established person in your community, I think the other thing too about giving advice is really important to listen to what the problem is and to listen to what the person who's asking for advice, what their situation is. Because oftentimes that person will tell you, this is the problem and this is the problem. And I've tried the solution and it didn't work. And I tried this solution and it didn't work. And where your advice is going to be valuable is where within those, where you can find the spaces in between where something is possible to change. It's not about being prescriptive about what the solution is. It's about listening to them, seeing where the gaps are, and hopefully finding something to help fill that gap. That's it.
Awesome. If you have any questions, you can send them to Dear Dina and Jen. We'd be happy to answer them. Oh, we haven't done any Twitter questions in a while, so maybe we'll do that again too.
Oh, Twitter questions.
So really, if you do have questions, Dear Dina and Jen is available to you. We're very thrilled with the poll that we conducted to determine the name of our fans.
What won? I didn't see
it. The winner was a write-in that I put into a new poll, and they are the Can't Evens, and we are so happy to have our listeners, the Can't Evens,
friends of the podcast,
support
the
us.
Can't Evens. Yep. We love you.
Do you have anything going on coming up that you want to talk about?
I'm just editing poems, and I'm not very good
Jen's
at it.
Jen's editing poems. Yeah, I'm going to be at Growing Room. You can look up the schedule. It's in March. I also,
super exciting.
In March, I forget something else. Anyway, don't worry about it.
I'm not doing anything for the foreseeable future. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be cool. Great. Yeah. Growing Room. Care about that. I don't have any advice.
Just, you know, give us 5 stars. That's the advice.
Yeah. The only advice I have for you is give us 5 stars, please. We need some new reviews and more episodes always coming your way because we love you.
We really do.
We really do. This is coming out before Valentine's Day. So if you think no one else loves you, we do.
We sure do.
Okay. Have a wonderful one.
Bye. Mwah. Mm-hmm.